Welcome back to episode 131 of the Hockey House Podcast presented by Optimex Sports. I'm your host, Mackenzie Murphy, as we bring you the latest news from the ACHA and AAU college hockey. It is part two of our national preview episode. We'll throw it over first to Collins. Collins, I'm about to join you in Philly here pretty soon in the next 24 hours since we hit record. We'll be in Westchester covering the AAU college hockey national championships from Iceline. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun. Going to get to see some familiar faces, going to get to see some new faces. It's always a blast being in Philly. It's super nice to just be 30 minutes from the rink and not have to travel a ton. But yeah, I'm super pumped up. This is like one of the weeks I look forward to the most, but also one of the weeks I dread just because like it's 12 hours of hockey a day, a lot going on. It's a great opportunity and, you know, looking forward to it.
Yeah, I've been looking to pull the trigger on a new pair of sneakers the last couple of days. I wear sneakers every day, so they get so gross so easily. And it's been a while since I got a new pair. And then I was like looking at what I have right now, and I was like, this isn't going to get me through 12 consecutive days of being on my feet for 12 hours. So went to the Adidas outlet down the road and got a fresh pair of kicks, and I'm ready to go. But a guy who I'm looking forward to seeing down in St. Louis once we make the trip from Philly to St. Louis for the second half of our Nationals extravaganza is our executive producer, David Herman. Herm, how are things?
Things are good. The Comets just had back-to-back shutouts for the first time in franchise history, which was insane. Kudos to Eric Schallgren and Isaac Poulter for kicking off March on a really, really positive note. And then to UCFC for absolutely thumping the Baltimore Blast.
Are your travel plans all good and everything ready to go? Or are you just kind of like counting down the days at this point? Or are you like me and you've just been so busy the last couple of days that like you haven't even really thought about it?
I really haven't thought about it. My flights have been booked for some time now. I'm excited to finally be locked into the club hockey, Herm.
I had to triple check last night my flight confirmations after my horrendous mishap earlier in the season where I booked flights for the wrong days and didn't even realize it, which is a story for another day. But I had actually booked flights for a vacation earlier in the day yesterday. And then when I went to make sure my flights were on the up and up for Philly and St. Louis, I had to go in and like triple check and make sure I was reading the right times. And actually, just before we hopped on, I got the notification to check in for my flight from Boston to Philly. So everything's looking good on that end. Again, kind of a quiet weekend in the ACHA and AAU college hockey as most teams around the country are prepping for the national championships. But it was an exciting weekend of hockey here in New Hampshire, for me at least. My 8U team that I've been coaching all year long, the 8U travel team, we had our end of season jamboree, and it was pretty funny. The games are 15 minutes and you play one after another, and you play three and then you get a break, and then you come back on the ice later in the afternoon, you play three. And we played at Proctor Academy, which is a very good prep school hockey tradition in New England, a smaller school in the Lakes region, and they have a turf field right next to their rink. Between games, the kids just start playing street hockey on the turf. They're playing soccer on the turf. I'm looking at everybody. I'm like, these kids are going to be gassed, right? Like, I'm like looking at the parents. I'm like, can we all just acknowledge that these kids are going to have nothing left when they step on the ice? They're eight, so I'm not going to be the coach who's like, you should be resting. You should be resting your body. You should be ready to go focus for the next one, because I'm like, these kids are not going to remember the hockey they've played today. They're going to remember running around on this turf field. So sure enough, we get out there for that second set of games, and we're about halfway through the first game of the hour ice slot, and you could just tell our kids did not have it. We had every time a kid would fall down, it was taking them 15 seconds to get up, and it was just kind of like we all got back to the locker room, and I was looking at the parents, we were all just like, yep, that's the season, right? Like, good thing we took the team photo before those games. So that was a lot of fun. And then I got to do it with one of my best friends growing up, Michael Seavey, who was my assistant coach this year. He came down and we actually played mites together too. So for us to coach the team in the playoffs was a lot of fun. And then we hightailed it back to Conway for the first round of the New Hampshire Division III playoffs, which was great. I want to say it was the biggest crowd in Conway's history at the Ham Arena the other night. I took a bunch of videos on my phone because I'm a high school hockey nerd. We actually played our cross-county rival, Kingswood. So usually the first round of the playoffs, they play a team from down south, and you know they don't really travel well. But first time I can remember like another school showing up with a bus full of high school students for a game, and they ended up losing 1-0. So it was my younger brother's final high school game, but he's going to play juniors next year and hopefully land a spot in the ACHA or AAU college hockey in a couple months here. So it was a great weekend of hockey up north here, but like you mentioned, now we're turning the corner and all eyes are on Westchester and St. Louis. So looking forward to the hockey action here again. Like, honestly, all I have in my suitcase right now is some swag for you guys, which we'll get to once we get to Philly and St. Louis. We have some exciting things in the pipeline right now, but there were a couple of teams that did play this weekend. I know the ACC had a couple of their championships, and then we had our game of the week, of course, and it was the Jayhawks making us look like big dumb idiots. I texted you guys after we recorded the interview portion of the show last week because we all said Mizzou, and then sure enough, after I interviewed those guys, I sent you guys a text and I was like, man, if I was just going to pick the game off of vibes, like I would have picked the Jayhawks because those guys were so funny. I don't want to say cocky, but they were just like excited for the game and they hated Mizzou, and it didn't even cross their mind that Mizzou was the number four team in the country. They were just like, it's Kansas and Mizzou and it's our last game of the season, so we're going to go all out. And go all out, they did, a 6-4 victory for them at the ECHL home of the Kansas City Mavericks. And it was a great crowd. I believe they had 5,000 on hand. I haven't seen an official attendance. It is a smaller, lower bowl there in Independence, Missouri. And it was a great crowd on hand for that. A lot of Mizzou fans, a lot of Kansas fans, and it was the Jayhawks coming out on top here. But Herm, do we have to retire game of the week picks after this season? Because I think that's the third time this year that we've been goose egged.
I'm just fortunate that we haven't gotten to the point of like college game day status where people are making graphics of us and then completely clowning on us. I'm glad that we retired it on the story. If we had done that and posted the Mizzou one, it would have lived on Kansas Barstool for God knows how long. We might have to talk about retirement. Might have to send that one down to Florida.
Yeah, we're losing a lot of integrity here, and we're either doubling down or making up for it here with our Nationals picks. We will preview AAU Division II, ACHA M2, Women's ACHA Division I, and Women's ACHA Division II. And then we will also do a brief A3 preview to get you all caught up here before it's all said and done on this week's episode. So we are going to breeze through everything because we have a great interview as well. Drexel captain Pat McGinley, longtime friend of the show, is joining us, and he had a phenomenal interview. Usually we try to cut those short, and we just kept going. It was a great conversation that him and I had earlier in the week, so we'll get you that to break up the action. Some weekend highlights here. High Point wins the ACC title in the top AAU tier of, because of the way the divisions worked out, it was actually two of the top seeds, Liberty and High Point, playing each other in the first round, despite being two of the stronger teams. So Friday night was basically the championship game. High Point wins that one. They never trailed all weekend. Some tough third periods against Liberty and Coastal. Coastal was the three-time reigning champ. They had upset Liberty in the previous 2 years. And so it was just the High Point Panthers rolling on. They've had a great year. And then William and Mary won the other ACC title this weekend down in Winston-Salem. Those are some conference championships that wrapped up. High Point already had punched their ticket to AAU D2 Nationals. And we're going to preview that one first. We'll start with Pool A in Westchester, the top seed FAU, number one, number 10, Penn State Harrisburg, number 15, Embry-Riddle, and number 20, Ramapo. I put a little section here, things to consider. Got a DM earlier in this week. Sounds like FAU is a little banged up in the College Hockey South tournament playoffs. A couple of weeks ago, they got upset by Clemson, you know, a team that's been number one all season long, won Battle at the Beach, a number of College Hockey South all-stars, and they weren't able to get it done. Stumbled last year against Buffalo in a key game at Nationals here. So a team that has kind of been the front runner all year, showing some bumps and bruises down the stretch here. So hopefully they're back and they're healthy when they get to Westchester. Another team worth mentioning in this pool is Penn State Harrisburg. They had a great season last year, made some noise at Nationals. They capped off their season with a top 10 finish and a DVCHC title. And then you have Embry-Riddle, who's number 15 sitting in Pool A, and they missed the College Hockey South playoffs. So just goes to show you how competitive College Hockey South is the 15th best team in the country, didn't even make their 8-team playoff earlier this year. So a chance for redemption for the Eagles. And then I got nothing on Ramapo. They're 20. They're kind of the odd one out in this one. Maybe they can use this as bulletin board material, but I saw they were in their conference playoffs, and you know, they are always at AAU Nationals as well. So we'll keep rolling then. Over to Pool B, number 2, Florida, number 9, Mass Maritime, number 14, Anna Maria, and number 19, Newman. Some things to consider in this one. Florida in the national tournament, a member of CHF and now AAU college hockey for a while now, and they haven't been to nationals. They're going to get a crack at it this year. The exact quote we got last year from College Hockey South Commissioner Kyle Nell was, just wait until Florida gets here. Talked about, you know, the brand of hockey that they play. We've mentioned it a couple times now on the podcast, but sitting at number 2, they've had some good series with FAU so far this season, you know, two of the top teams in College Hockey South. Neither one of them, though, bringing home the title. So see Florida make some noise in Westchester. And then you got Mass Maritime, who's going back to nationals. Anna Maria, a team that did really well last year, didn't get to go to nationals. They're making an appearance. And then number 19, Newman, a team we saw last year. Doesn't have to travel very far for this one. We'll keep rolling to Pool C. Number 3, High Point. Number 8, UCF. Number 13, Alabama Huntsville. Number 18, Farmingdale. We talked about High Point. They were just happy to be there last year, and they gave Georgia a run for their money in one of those games. Now they're back. They're going back to Westchester, and they're ready to make some noise, coming off their first ACC title in program history. Alabama Huntsville in this pool, would love to see them make some noise. We talked to them a couple of times this season. They weren't getting the respect that they deserved. Now they have a chance to go and prove it at nationals. So would keep an eye on the Chargers. And then number 18, Farmingdale. We will find out, does beating a bottom feeder ACHA M1 team mean anything at nationals? They have a chance. You know, they're making some headlines later in the season here. Can they make some noise in their pool here and make a statement at AAU nationals? Moving along to Pool D, number 4, Tennessee, number 7, Tampa, number 12, SUNY Brockport, and number 17, Union. Collins, you got some scoop on these Flying Dutchmen?
Win championships.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think they're bringing those Summit Blues to nationals too. We saw them wearing them the other day when they beat Auburn. You need a game to clinch it and win the pool. You might as well break out the Summit Blues. You can't get any more championship ready than breaking out the Summit Blues. Moving along to Pool E, there are 5 pools in AAU D2. Number 5, Bishops. Number 6, Liberty. Number 11, Clemson. And number 16, Vanderbilt. Some things to consider in this one. We have our first Canadian participant in the AAU College Hockey National Championships. We're going to get both anthems. Bishops is making the trip down. We talked to those boys when they came on a while ago. We've had them on twice now, but a key part in them joining the CHF is a chance to compete for a national championship. Now it's AAU College Hockey. They finally get to come down to nationals, and they're sitting at number 5. They have a good spot here, and they're ready to make some noise. Want to mention, this might be the first time a Liberty team has ever flown under the radar in any level of club hockey. You know, usually they're in the mix at the top. I feel like we haven't talked enough about this Liberty team, but they sit at number 6. And then you got number 11, Clemson, and number 16, Vanderbilt. The Vandy social media team had a lot to say when they swept Clemson earlier in this semester, and now the two teams are in the same pool. Let's not forget about that one. That should be an exciting matchup as well. Anything that sticks out to you in the AAU D2 pools here? I think we wouldn't be doing our job if we didn't mention this one also has the wild cards. So the top team in each pool will advance. That'll be 5 of the 8 spots in the quarterfinals. And then 3 teams will battle it out. You know, if you have an overtime loss, you know, you have a really good goal differential, but you're not the top team. There's going to be a couple teams that squeak in. I look at a pool like Pool E with Bishops and Liberty. Maybe one team wins that game. The loser might get that wild card spot. So it will be very interesting to see how this one works. It is going to be chaos at Iceline during these wild card games. Not these wild card games, but when these wild card spots are up for grabs. So Collins, anything that stands out to you? Maybe some teams that we saw last year and expecting big things?
I wouldn't say I'm expecting big things, but I would like to see Clemson improve upon their performance last year. I mean, they got, I think, 1 win, was it last year? Something like that. I feel like that's a team and a brand that you would like to see go the distance. I think it's really going to be the usual suspects. I mean, I'm saying Florida as like usual suspect, but that Pool B is definitely going to be pretty interesting between Florida and Mass Maritime. You know, Mass Maritime, a team that typically shows up and plays a bit of spoiler at nationals, so going to be enjoying watching some of these games.
Yeah, it should be an exciting one. And Collins, you were kind of mentioning this earlier, we should find out a lot about College Hockey South in this one. It seems like there's a lot of teams from the South here, almost 2 in every pool. Talked about how tough that was to make the playoffs. Embry-Riddle is ranked 15th, and they didn't even make their own playoffs, and now they're going to nationals, so certainly should be an interesting one.
Yeah, this was something I mentioned in the group chat too, taking a page out of a big discussion in lacrosse right now, because this, I think, will answer the question of the big boy conference versus the pretty boy conference. And if I'm being honest, I think the uni is the big boy conference, and then the CHS is the pretty boy conference. The uni gets the job done. The CHS just kind of looks good and has that top ranking.
Well, the thing that I'm most excited for about this tournament, and we forgot to mention it last episode when we talked about AAU Division One, this tournament is going to be free to watch online on Black Dog, which is amazing. I think that has been honestly maybe a crucial part of our success over the last couple of years, is we've basically been live streaming these games for free with all the highlights on our Instagram story. We hope people continue to show out and support us on social media during this national championship run here, but these games are going to be free on Black Dog, and you can go online and you can get the AAU pass for free with a Black Dog account. They're going to have all the games for you. You know, if you're at home, you can watch all of these games at the same time while we're running around from rink to rink to get updates on the scores. So it should be a really good week of hockey, and I wanted to give kudos to the AAU for making this a free event and making sure that anyone who wants to can watch these games. I'm sure there's going to be plenty of watch parties on these campuses for these teams. And that's what you love to see, growing the game and making sure everybody has the chance to go and watch that. And again, they got a shout out to their sponsors too, because I believe it was some sponsors who came forward to cover the cost of the broadcast and make sure that it could be free for everyone watching. So from one Division II to the other, we'll move over to ACHA Men's Division II to give the national preview. Starting things off with Pool A, Montana State, Keene State, Concordia, Wisconsin, and Miami. This is a gauntlet of a pool. They're all kind of gauntlets, but this one has some heavy hitters here. With UMary gone, you had Montana go on a record-setting year. They came up a little bit short in their conference playoffs. You have sort of a last dance for Keene State. They will be adding an NCAA Division III team, so they are the big dog on campus for a couple more months. I'm sure they would love to bring home a title to New Hampshire. Miami is in this pool. They went on a run and won the TSCHL. They got some fresh new jerseys in the second half, and they have been riding with them for months now. And then you got Concordia, Wisconsin. We talked about the controversial ending to their regional game in overtime against Minnesota, who was on a Cinderella run. But this is a CUW team that we've talked about for the last 2 years because they have some heavy hitters up front. If you look at the men's ACHA scoring leaders across all divisions, they have three guys in the top 10. It starts with number 10, Charles Eame, 86 points in 30 games played. Then you have Ian Malcolmson, number 59. He's got 22 games played and 65 points. And then Garrett Wilderman, 33 games played, 62 points. Charlie Eame, 51 goals on the season as a freshman. He played 9 games in the NAHL last year. He's an 04. Malcolmson played 3 years in the USHL, was a captain of one of those teams before committing to Northern Michigan, where he played 2 years of Division I NCAA hockey. He spent last year with CUW, had 76 points and led them to nationals. And then you got Wilderman, just a kid from the NA3, played a couple games in the NAHL, but pretty on par with some elite prospects pages you would see across the ACHA. But these three guys up front, you're going to have to watch out for if you're going against CUW. And again, this could be anybody's pool here. I don't know, Herm, if you're looking at this, if there's anyone that stands out to you, or if you're just going to let it all play out.
Obviously, it's a little painful for me seeing Miami instead of Ohio University on the other side of the Battle of the Bricks rivalry. This looks like the pool of death to me. Honestly, Montana State has been a weapon the whole year. Murph has been itching to get to Keene State more than you guys even know. Get that man some gold bond. CUW, insane talent up front, as we've talked about. It is like a coin flip to see who's going to make it out of this pool.
And I think that is the thing about M2. We saw it last year too, especially in those pools that are really tough. Sometimes it's that team, like the dark horse. Like, I would say Miami's kind of the dark horse in this one because they end up winning the TSCHL. Then they go the distance at regionals as well. So they're a team that's hot and maybe a team that wasn't projected to be in nationals a month ago. So watch out for Pool A. And Pool B, you have Northeastern, Weber State, Indiana, and Michigan State. Some things to consider in this one. The Huskies are going to nationals for at least the third year in a row. They went to St. Louis. They went to Boston. Now they're back in St. Louis. They have not made it out of pool play in either of those two tournaments. They came down to the wire with UMary, actually, a couple years ago in St. Louis. No UMary this year. Maybe they can make it out in St. Louis. You got Weber State, who won the Wasatch Cup. They made it all the way through. You got Indiana. They had to play their way through regionals after just missing out on the auto bid. And then you had Michigan State, who also played through regionals. So should be an interesting one here. Maybe not as heavy as Pool A, but Indiana went on a run last year. They had a heartbreaking loss in the semifinals to Iowa. So I'm sure they're looking for some revenge. Again, they're going to Nationals for the third year in a row as well. Turning things over to Pool C, you got Lindenwood, Liberty, Providence, and Army. Lindenwood has been the number one team for most of this season. They are looking to do what the ACHA M1 team did in 2022, and that is win a title on home ice. They made it to the Final Four last time around in St. Louis on the ACHA M2 side. You have Liberty, who, just like Lindenwood last year, got upset in pool play. There's a reason we saw Iowa and Indiana move on. It was because Indiana upset Lindenwood, and then you had Iowa upset Liberty. So two teams ranked pretty high this season. They want to make some noise at Nationals and avenge last season's upsets.
I will be interested to see what sort of fan support Lindenwood gets. I remember through the good majority of that M1 run when they were in Centene last year, there weren't a ton of Lindenwood fans, just because I know of distance to campus. And then I think it was the university that bussed them in for the national championship. Do you remember that, Murph?
Yeah, they had some kind of deal going too. I can't remember what it was, but I do remember being on the side rink, the smallest rink at Centene, when Lindenwood clinched a spot in the semifinals. And the route that they took to their locker room, they must have logged 2 miles walking to and from their own locker room, because they got dressed in the regular locker room, but they had to walk all the way over to rink 3. So there was a lot of people there. Again, that rink doesn't take much to get it packed. We saw some very memorable M3 games in that rink. So I'm sure they'll get pretty much the same support. And with no Lindenwood men's team playing this time of year, you'd hope that the school comes out and shows them some love. Then you got Providence, a team that almost didn't have a team last year. The year before, they upset Florida Gulf Coast. Herm and I caught the tail end of that game a couple years ago in St. Louis. And then you had Florida Gulf Coast a goal away, losing in overtime in the national championship game. So Providence was right there. They skated with the best of them, totally revamped the program. They turned this thing around, and now they are going back to Nationals after their regional victory. And then you got Army. You can't forget about the troops. Army going to Nationals for the first time in program history. So you know that they are going to be competitive, because Patty talked about it earlier. Collins has talked about it all the time, but those Service Academy kids are hard to play against. They are very disciplined. They give it their all. The stamina is there, especially this time of year. So Pool C should be an interesting one as well.
Unrelated, but I'm sorry to all the Providence guys. I will be rooting on your downfall the entire weekend. A little Big East rivalry there. They're the last team in March Madness, and we're the first team out. So
I like the hatred. I really do. This happens to be Providence University in Montana.
Oh, I just saw Providence.
No, it's all right. The University of Providence Argos.
Oh, shit. Well, never mind.
Do you have anything to say to the Argos now?
The spirit was there.
I don't have anything to say to the Argos. I will not be praying on your downfall. I was going to be praying on the Friars.
All right, we got a speed round here. Florida Gulf Coast, St. Thomas, New Hampshire, and MSU Denver make up Pool B to round out ACHAM. Collins, I'll let you take this one. You did most of the preview here.
Yeah, this is going to be another interesting pool. FGCU is looking like an absolute wagon right now. They have a +114 goal differential. It wasn't just playing against, you know, some of the bottom feeders. I split with Lindenwood and Northeastern on the season, which was interesting. They also steamrolled through Kentucky and then swept Liberty. And this is a team built of guys mainly from South Florida, and they're like begging to prove that Florida is the hockey capital of the U.S. They have 9 guys and 9 forwards, to be specific, over a point per game, which is crazy. Their top 3 lines all over a point per game. That's nuts. And then St. Thomas, also a wagon. They're +133 on goal differential, and they are 23-5 with all their wins coming in regulation. So they're a team that wants to get the job done and be home in time for dinner. They don't have the strength of schedule that FGCU has, but they have a ton of convincing wins, and obviously playing in Minnesota is not easy. You know, also got to keep an eye out for UNH. They're just a bunch of Mass boys who, you know how to play some hard-nosed Northeast hockey. MSU Denver, it's a team that's kind of flown under the radar. We've been talking about them since January, but they're a sneaky team to watch, and they've hung in there with the big boys like Montana and Montana State. I believe they lost to Montana 5-4, so they're definitely a team to watch, and this is going to be an interesting pool.
Herm, we saw it last year where St. Thomas ended up pulling away with the empty net overtime victory over UMary and spoiling the party. I'm curious here, of all the pools that we've mentioned, is there a team like an Iowa or an Indiana who had to play their way through regionals that you like? Again, not you're not predicting anything here, but if you were maybe going to see a repeat of that in this year's tournament, because most of the time the team advances from pool play is the team that got the auto bid. But if you were to pick a team to make the semis that has flown under the radar, had to crawl through regionals, like, is there a team that's on your mind?
I'm going to go with Indiana. This year, they've got a real, real solid shot of making it. Seeing the upward trajectory of the program since Fitzy was there to now, and they've got a little bit of swagger in their step. Let's say that for sure. And we've seen that in our comment section. I like their chances this year.
And then I'll go the reverse of that. Collins, a team that got the auto bid to nationals. Is there a team that you think is going to cruise their way to the semifinals and get out, survive pool play?
I guess FGCU. I mean, they're a team that's, you know, used to being at nationals, been here before, been in this situation before. And obviously we got some friends of the pod on that team. So yeah, I think they're the team to watch.
All right. Well, we got to get to our interview here, but we do have some stick taps going. Want to give a shout out to FAU goalie Rocco Bruno. He actually threw out the first pitch at the FAU baseball game the other day, was celebrating his nomination as a College Hockey South All-Star. Also, they were, you know, promoting the team, raising some funds to go to nationals. He did lob one right down the middle. Collins, how far are you taking this thing?
450 dead center. It was a strike, though. I'll give him that. I'm not taking it 450 dead center. It was a strike. It was better than 50 cent, 100%.
Also want to give a shout out to Oklahoma State netminder Caleb Martinez. He stopped 47 of 49 shots faced in the Cowboys 3-2 win over Drury to wrap up the season. And then I want to give a shout out to Utah ACHA M1 head coach Morgan Feeney for being named Conference Coach of the Year in the Western League, which was great to see. Had the opportunity to meet Morgan and his coaching staff when I went out to Utah back in August, which feels like decades ago, and they were nothing but phenomenal to me out there. So it's good to see him doing great things and being recognized from the league. We hope to see that team down in St. Louis in the ACHA M1 tournament. All right, we'll turn it over to our interview. And as always, this one's brought to you by Optimex Sports. Optimex Sports provides teams the opportunity to build and manage their own website. And the best part is these guys know club hockey. So be sure to check them out using the link in our bio. And if you're interested in signing up, be sure to use our referral link at optimexsports.com/signup/hockeyhousepod. We have an Optimex website now, so be sure to check that out at hockeyhousepod.com. We're loving it so far. We throw up that links to the episodes there, writing some blogs. We'll probably put some nationals updates in there. Maybe we can do a little blog series when we get back to the hotel and we're exhausted, just whatever's on our mind. And hope you guys enjoy that. We got some bios on there as well. So hockeyhousepod.com for all your Hockey House Pod needs. Without further ado, we'll turn over to this week's guest, Drexel captain Pat McGinley. We're pleased to be joined by the captain of the 2024 ESCHL champion, Drexel Dragons. Drexel grad student, ACHA M1 captain number 13, Pat McGinley. Patty, it is a pleasure to finally have you on the Hockey House podcast.
What's going on? How's it doing? How's it going, Mac? Good to be here, man.
Pumped to have you on. It's always good, too. We had Jonathan Shaw from URI earlier on in the year, and it's like, I don't even need notes for these guys that I played against CHL. Like, we talked before so many face-offs, you know, at the end of warm-ups, yep, the captains meeting, all that stuff. Like, we could do a four-hour podcast just about what goes on between Syracuse, URI, Drexel, Stony Brook, and Delaware. Speaking of all those teams, you guys ran through the gauntlet. You won the ESCHL title in Scranton this past weekend. But before we get to all that, 6 years at Drexel, are you officially done with ACHA? Can you announce your retirement on the podcast?
I am officially done, man. I have no more eligibility. As much as I would love to go get that PhD, I'm done. My body's been through the ringer and back. I'm done.
You have enough Drexel hockey apparel that you're set for life?
Yes, absolutely. It's honestly, like, I've been giving all my sweaters to my girlfriend, so I had to borrow this one from her. But like, dude, she has it all now, but like, it's insane, man. I have so much gear. I give it to rookies because they don't have, like, we did a dress down day for when we went to go play Stony Brook. It was like a crazy, like, Thursday night game. And we were like, all right, we're doing a dress down. And like, it was giving rookies, yo, you can have some of my sweatshirts, man. Like, we gotta get the guys geared up. Nah, man, it's great to be here. I'm officially done. After this year, what a ride it's been. It's been insane.
That is a core ACHA memory, is donating your leftover sweats. And the apparel order hasn't come in yet. I remember those weekend series in October where you show up to the bus with like a duffel bag filled with hoodies and sweats for guys to wear because they don't have anything.
Yeah, dude, it's insane, man. It's insane.
So walk us through like last couple days, right? Like you guys were at the basketball game last night getting honored.
Yeah. This past week has been insane, man. Like nonstop, just celebrating, being with the guys. We were brought out to the men's basketball game last night, who actually played Stony Brook, and they won. It was an awesome game. We were in Stony Brook's kitchen. It was like they set us up right by their bench. Their coach and one of the players of Drexel basketball team came up to us and was like, make it hell for them tonight. As you can imagine, our guys were just, the chirps were flying. It was unreal. So actually this morning we got a call, one of the guys that set it up, we got a call from the head coach of the basketball team, and he was like, boys, we need you back tomorrow. Like we have another big game and like we need you guys to throw chirps tomorrow. So I think the boys are going to go back and do it all again. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
They're like, we'll give you another Jumbotron tribute if you come. Bring the trophy, wear the jerseys.
Exactly. He was like, I don't know what it's going to take to get you guys out here. Like, he's like, I'll drink from the trophy, whatever it takes. Like, we just need you guys here. It was like such a game changer. So yeah, it was awesome.
So, I mean, looking at the schedule second half of the semester, and you know, I'm keeping an eye on the standings because obviously I want Syracuse in the playoffs. And it seemed like it was you guys, Delaware and Syracuse, three teams, two spots. NYU is not in the playoffs after this season. Did something click in the second semester where you guys just kind of turned it on? Because you seemed like a lot different on paper, at least, than you were in the first semester.
After that break, like I just remember not even touching the ice during break. Like we were all super frustrated. You know, there were so many ups and downs during that first half, a lot of downs. I remember going to Syracuse playing you guys and we got swept. I think Syracuse was the only team we didn't beat this year. And it was like such a tough first half. Like I remember just flipping out in the locker room, and like, I don't normally do that. Like I'm a pretty like chill guy. We were all at our wit's end by the end of break, and we all agreed like, let's take some time to relax, enjoy time with our family over break. And then we came back, we just hit the ground running. I think we all agreed that like then on out was a must win. And like, you know, we really wanted to try and make a run at this thing. We all had to kind of buy in and figure it out. So yeah, somehow things just came together and the Dragons got hot and we figured it out.
So you get a split against URI and then you guys come back, you beat Westchester to start off the semester. But like we've talked about it all the time, Thomas Sullivan, who was a Stony Brook goalie for a while, big beauty. Him and I are always texting back and forth because like the teams are all so similar. Like anybody can beat anybody on a given weekend. And it's one of the best conferences in the ACHA. So you do kind of have to have that mental toughness during the year to be like, hey, like we're right there. I know we're not winning games. And like you mentioned, sometimes you got to freak out in the locker room, even if you're not that kind of guy. But what's the preparation like for the playoffs? Yeah, you packed for the full weekend, but you didn't necessarily expect to use that fourth pair of socks in your duffel bag, right? Starting off with Delaware, who you guys had some tough series with at the end of the year, but like they're going to nationals. Like, are guys even thinking about that? Or is like, hey, we have one more weekend of hockey?
Yeah, I mean, I know my mentality was like, this is my last weekend of hockey ever. You know, every game, I'm just going to treat it as if it's my last and give it everything I absolutely have. And I think that was for everybody, you know, no matter what happened, we just wanted to leave it all out there. And we didn't really have expectations going into it. You know, obviously it was just kind of one game at a time. I was telling you about, you know, the comfy clothes after that Stony Brook game. That was our last regular season game before we went up to Ohio. We were like, let's stay comfy, keep the vibes loose. Yeah, I mean, we just tried not to take ourselves too seriously, I think. It ended up working out for us.
Now, I got to ask, because I saw like the crowd shot of the championship game. Were people hopping on the Drexel bandwagon as you guys kept winning in Scranton? Like, did you guys have more fans and more parents at each game?
Yeah, dude. Yeah, it was awesome. Like, we had, I think it was the Scranton Knights. There was a bunch of kids. By the way, those kids are sick. Like, we watched a game before ours. It was like a 14U game. These kids could have played in the ACHA. Like, there were some nasty guys out there. And I was like, dang, could we like recruit them for our team? But after we won, I think it was like a 12U team that played after us. And kids came on the ice and they were like trying to celebrate with us. There's two kids that were like, Kat, do we just want to shake your hand? Like, you guys are awesome. And it was like, it was a super cool moment to be able to share it with all the guys. It was awesome. All the parents came out. I forget who was telling me. There was somebody on our team that there was another team that came to watch. They were all riding for us because they knew we were the underdogs. You know, everybody just had chills after that game call with the Delaware guy who calls the games is absolutely phenomenal, by the way. The countdown's going 3, 2, 1, the Cinderella story's complete. Like, just going back and watching that, like, everybody that was on the stream, they were saying how many chills they had and just, like, what a crazy moment it was. Definitely was cool to see the support. It was awesome having all the parents and friends and family out, so.
Just like the Miracle on Ice, like, you beat the big dog in the semis, and then it's like, who cares who's after this? Walk me through, like, was there any chirping from, like, the Delaware and Niagara guys as, like, the clock is running out? Were they saying, like, oh, at least we're going to Natty's?
Honestly, no. Like, we were surprised. We all said it after. Like, we really respect those guys for, you know, giving us the respect that we deserve. I mean, I think Delaware, like, we also won 4-1. And, like, I think we beat them well enough that, like, you know, it didn't matter either way. Even Niagara, like, after the game, they were like, hey, go win this thing. Like, definitely expected to be getting some chirps because, like, we weren't going to Nationals. It was just testament to how, you know, respectful those guys are. I can say that I do not like Delaware at all. I do not like playing URI, but, like, at the end of the day, you know, when we shake hands, same hockey players at the end of the day. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
I got to ask, how greasy were those road blues that third game putting them on? Were they, like, soaked in sweat?
Yeah, well, no, it was actually cool because the Scranton rink gave us, I guess it was the Kings, they play out of there, the women's locker room. We were able to, like, hang our gear up, which was awesome. So it was nice and dry. But yeah, man, we didn't want to, like, wear any other jersey. We were like, we can't wear our creams because we keep winning in the blues. So we were like, we have to wear them. So it was wild. I still can't believe, like, that we won. I have a trophy right here. This is a trophy right here, man.
So, like, you have the best deal in the ACHA, and granted, this is, like, part of our Nationals preview episode, so, like, maybe we shouldn't be saying this, but, like, I came to Syracuse in the fall of 2019. It was right after they had won the Eschel in 2019, and honestly, a similar route to you guys. They were, like, one of those teams that was ranked 19th, didn't make the cut to Nationals, and then they went and won the conference tournament, and they beat ranked Stony Brook and ranked Liberty, and then won the title. And they had the best gig because they went and then they had a good time the rest of the week and they didn't have to worry about fundraising for Nationals or getting back on the ice and practicing. Like, they basically just did a victory lap. And then, you know, if they had gone to Nationals, you know, maybe they play Minot State in the first round or something and then they fundraise all that money to lose. But, like, you guys go out on top. I know a bunch of the guys probably would have loved to go to Nationals. You go out on top and then you do this little victory tour.
100%. And, like, we all said that too. Like, our coach was pissed because our one coach, Ryan Williams, was like, I wish you guys would have figured this out, like, earlier in the year, how to be sick. Like, we probably would have gone to Nationals, getting to go out on top and, like, being able to share this with my teammates and my family. Like, I wouldn't have wanted it any other way. Like, yeah, Nationals would have been really cool, but there's nothing better than doing a little victory lap after. Like, literally every day, like, I'm so behind on my homework, is like every day this week the guys have just been getting together, like, celebrating any chance we can get. It's been unreal.
Well, I got to ask too, is there like a bar tour that you've done? Like, walk me through what the scene is like in Philly, because I'm sure there's a couple different college bars that are Drexel specific bars that you guys have gone to and brought the trophy to.
Yeah, so I have the huge shout out to the Black Taxi in Philly. It's actually right near me. It's this, like, old Irish pub, and a lot of the older guys just go and hang out for a pint of Guinness and just chill there. So we know all the bartenders. They have one of our jerseys hanging up in the bar. Yeah, that just kind of became our spot this year. I'm not much of, like, a drinker. I don't, like, party that much, but, like, I have to, like, go out with the boys this week. So it's been awesome. But we've been going to as many of the – we went to a Penn bar. There was one on Drexel's campus. Everybody's like, well, what is that? Like, what? And we're like, yeah, we're champions. Like, everybody loves it. Like, drinking out of the cup, there's nothing like it, man. Like, it's such a cool feeling. The boys are still going strong. I'm trying my best to stay. I'm getting old, man. I'm trying to stay up with the times here, but it's tough. These guys go like it's nothing. It's crazy.
I'm assuming, like, what's your grad class schedule like? Like, it's probably a little different than maybe these guys who are missing their English 101 class.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, honestly, it's not terrible. I front loaded a lot of my schedule. So the grad program was originally supposed to be 1 year when I decided to kind of do that extra year. I guess last season, finished the season, and then I knew I was going to still go for, there was like one more term, because Drex was weird. We have a quarter system. So I had one more term that following year. So I would have only been able to play like half a hockey season. You know, I talked to the school and the admissions and delay my graduation by an extra 3 months so that I could play my like final season completely out. So that was this season. Kind of getting to chill now, which is nice.
Let's rewind a little bit. Like, walk us through how you ended up at Drexel, how you found the ACHA and all that. Like, where did you play hockey growing up?
So I'm a public school kid. I played tier two hockey like my entire life. Hatfield Ice Dogs out of Bucks County, Pennsylvania. I grew up in like the middle of nowhere. There's like just like farms everywhere around me. Playing like tier two double A my whole life. Like I tried out for the Philadelphia Little Flyers and I made the team my freshman year of high school. It was right after they had won nationals. They were sick. I made the team, which was like unreal. Was going into my sophomore year of high school and I was thinking about playing AAA. Practice was like an hour and a half to 2 hour drive, like every day. It would have been, I was like, I don't think I can do this. Like, so I would have been leaving a lot of my friends. And like hockey for me has always been about like that brotherhood and the friendships. So, you know, I decided to stay tier two. Then I played for my high school, Pennridge High School. It's a funny story, actually. My senior year, I didn't play like travel hockey. I only played for my public high school before going to the ACHA. So I was like so burnt out at that point that I think if I played another year of travel, I might not have played in college. It was my senior year. Just played high school hockey, the SHL. And two of my best friends to this day, Josh Finlayson, Nate Runk, they came to Drexel and I had visited them a couple times. They told me the hockey team at Drexel was pretty good. And I did a couple tours. I loved the school and it was a pretty easy decision. I really didn't apply anywhere else. Like I was looking at Boston University for a little bit. I knew I wasn't going to play hockey there. You know, I wanted to stay in Philly. I love this city. Yeah, when I got accepted to Drexel on early decision, it was kind of a no-brainer. I met the coach Zoldy at the time. Yeah, it just kind of all fell into place. It was kind of weird how it happened.
Did Drexel have the D2 team back then? Was there ever a conversation about like tryouts, which team you'd play on? Because I know like nowadays, ACHA coaches looking at kids straight out of high school, that jump from high school to ACHA Division I is a lot bigger than it was back then.
My freshman year was actually the first year we had a D1 and a D2 team. They're also coming straight off of like their second ECHA championship in a row. Yeah, I was just trying to make the team when I got there. I was lucky I had known, you know, two guys and they kind of introduced me to some of the boys, which was good for, you know, a kid, a freshman coming in, scared out of his mind to try and make a hockey team. Obviously wanted to make the D1 team, but you know, I was just trying not to get cut. So there was a lot of really good players. And also like coming in as a true freshman, you know, you come in with a lot of like 21-year-old freshmen that are like juniors kids, this little young kid at 18 years old coming in. I felt like that time too, we were a really old team. We had a lot of like junior guys that had been around different hockey leagues. And I think it was like one of like the summer skates. There was this kid, Cam Neely, he's the man, but he's a psycho. And I'll tell him that to his face. He is crazy. He gave me a laser of a pass, like my first rep in like a passing drill, some super easy flow drill. It was a laser of a pass and it just bounced right off my back. Welcome to the show, buddy. And I was like, oh man, here we go. So I'll never forget that. But I guess tryouts happened and I was lucky enough to get a spot. Yeah, that freshman year was a lot of fun. We had a really, really good team. Like pre-COVID. Yeah, we went to nationals that year as well. Dallas, which I remember you chirped me for my you were like, dang, look at that Dallas sticker on your helmet.
Yeah, I think it was last year because I was like doing my math and I was like, I think Patty graduated. And then you were out on the ice for warm-up, like, because like we follow each other on Instagram, so like I hadn't seen you post anything about Drexel hockey and I was like, I figured Patty just graduated. And then sure enough, you came out with the C again and I was giving you a hard time after the face-off, like, is this kid still got the Frisco decal on his helmet?
I know, man. It was hilarious. And like, it's funny because like I've been a senior for longer than I've been like an underclassman. Every year I'm like, all right, this is the last year. And then grad school comes around, I'm like, all right, this is the last year. You know, I extended my graduation, play one final year. Again, I can confirm this is the last year. Yeah, it's been a wild ride.
Well, and dude, I noticed that you did upgrade your helmet this year. So I'm guessing you had to ditch the Frisco sticker.
Yeah, I did. It like literally just got to a point where my helmet was just falling apart. Like my cage was so rusty. Like if I got hit, like I don't have like J-clips either. So it's like, if I got hit and my cage like cut me, like I would probably get like Lyme's disease or whatever because it was so rusty. I think it got to a point where the foam was also just like disintegrating. So my dad was like, yeah, you should probably get a new helmet. Our trainer, Bridget, even was like, you're not allowed to wear that. I was like, all right. So I was getting some chirps from the boys because, you know, I had a brand new clean bucket and it was like my sixth year. But yeah, I had to finally get some stickers. I think I posted this one picture on Instagram and I looked like such a noob because I had no stickers on my helmet. Yeah, I guess the order didn't come in time. But
did you get them by the end of the year?
Yeah, I still don't have number stickers on the back, but I have the decals. So like, I'll take
that's all you need for men's league. All you need for men's league. You just need them by the time you get to men's league. You need the college decals on your helmet.
Those So I was like, you know what? I don't even care. Honestly, my gloves were falling apart too. So I got we got sick new gloves that have like a Drexel like embroidery on the thumb. I was like, coach, I need a pair of those like before I leave. And mine were falling apart. He hooked me up. Of course, like my last year, this is the most sticks I've ever broken in a year. Like I've broken like 4 or 5 sticks this year just on like face-offs. I think I have like the FT6 Pro. The stick is like breaks so easily. Can finally stop buying gear, hopefully, for men's league. Just like gear up for beer league.
I did the same exact thing. I was like, it was like halfway through senior year and like my palms were starting to get a hole in them. And I like knew it was like something like I could just play the rest of the season. It would be totally fine. And then I was like half complaining to coach one day. I was like, oh, coach, I'm starting to get a hole in my palm here. And he's like, we can get you a new pair of gloves. And I was like, let's go. Cause like, I'm still using those now for coaching. So you guys, did you win the ECHA in 2019 to go to nationals?
No. So 2019, I'm pretty sure we lost and we were supposed to win. We were like, I think we were like the 1 or 2 seed, if my memory serves correct. We had a sick season. But I think we lost to like Navy. We always play them. So every year, like we do the Cold Steel Classic and we always play them like kind of like a sick rivalry. But yeah, we lost to them 2019. We knew we still had nationals. We went up to nationals and had a blast. The year before COVID happened. So that next season was when we won the ECHA title. We went back to Navy and we beat them at their barn. You know how it is playing in Navy. Like it is such a cool atmosphere, especially after the game when they do their alma mater. And those guys are like, when the national anthem's going, like they are rock solid. Like they don't move until the very last note comes out of the speakers. Like really, really cool atmosphere to play in. That year we didn't go to nationals because of COVID happened. Everything shut down. We had won the ECHA and then we were gearing up to go to nationals and then everything shut down. That sophomore year, we had a sick team. Our goal going to nationals is like just get our first win, because I don't think there's been a win for Drexel hockey in nationals yet. So still trying to build towards that first win. But we had a really, really sick team that year. And it's such a shame that, you know, a lot of seniors that year got their seasons cut short. You know, everybody knows how it is.
So you only got to go to Frisco once, but you have enough scooter stories for 2 years.
Yeah, dude. Oh, my gosh.
We've had guys who went like guys from other teams have come on the podcast and mentioned the scooters in Dallas.
Those lime or the bird scooters were the most fun I've ever had, man. Like, I want to say like, half of our team, we were like mobbing down the streets of Dallas, just like going to different restaurants. At one point, like a lot of the older guys went to this bar and I didn't have, you know, an ID. I wasn't getting into any of the bars. So me and a couple of the younger guys, we literally just like took our scooters and we just hit the town and we were going to different, there was like Tex-Mex spots. Like losing sucked, but like after that, like the next day was like a blast. Like we didn't have to worry about it. We weren't leaving. Our plane wasn't till like the next day. So we had an entire day to just like experience the city. And dude, the scooters were definitely the highlight. It was so much fun.
That's awesome. So you mentioned obviously everything gets shut down. No nationals, yeah. No season the following year. Being a city school, like, was COVID challenging? Like, were you guys able to get on the ice? Was it hard because it's Penn's rink that you guys play at? Like, I'm sure there was a lot of yellow tape there.
Yeah, no, it was really tough. I was paying for an apartment. Like, nobody was even living in the city. Like, a lot of the guys had gone home. Drexel went completely remote. Yeah, and of course, Penn, you know, it's their rink. Even like open hockeys and stuff, like guys still have to like pay if you're a Drexel student. Yeah, it would be really sick to have a rink on campus. They still work with us here and there when we could get ice. Guys hadn't touched the ice and it was like there was, you know, nothing was open. So like nobody could do anything. So yeah, I think that was the biggest thing, you know, just not being able to see the boys and like not be able to hang out and you lose touch with people. So especially like the seniors and kind of them going out on the note that, you know, we were geared up to be, you know, sick team in nationals. And it was a tough situation for sure, but Penn tried to work with us and they definitely helped us out, but would have been nice to. COVID just sucks in general. Everybody knows that, you know.
I think it is an all-time barn in the ACHA, but what's your best class of 23 arena story?
Dude, oh man. Whenever we do the Cold Steel Classic against Navy, like I mentioned before, like we always pack class of 23. It's such an old school arena. It really is cool, like having those stands and like when we can fill both sides, at least like the bottom few rows, like because there's a lot of seats. Like playing at the Bird in Ohio is like such a cool experience, but like Penn is like so much crazier because of how many seats there are. Like it's tough to fill. Like yeah, it's like echoey in there. It gets loud, especially in the last few years. We've gotten these like Division 1 level lights. Like we get a cool little light show going when we score. Like a strobe action. I just remember whenever we play Navy, it's always like such a crazy, crazy game. Like, you know, Navy families come down from Maryland and we always pack the stands. We do like frat and sorority nights and, you know, getting the school involved as much as we can. It's not far from Drexel's campus. Like the rink itself, like my freshman year, I would walk. It's always nice to get a ride from one of the seniors when you're a young kid, but like it's super close to campus. So we get a lot of students come, we get a little student section. And yeah, it's definitely an electric atmosphere to play in for sure.
Like it's very loud and you see like the fans and all that stuff. But one thing that class of 23 has that I really like is I feel like we always played you guys on alumni weekend and the glass is so low and the seating is so steep. You're like 3 feet away from literally having a conversation with the people in the crowd. Like I remember there was a couple like guys who just graduated who like I'm lining up for a draw and they're just like giving it to me in my ear. Like, we're at a Duke basketball game.
It's also cool because class of 23 has that, like, it's like a lane on the top row that like guys just hang out above the goalies. Every game we always have, you know, a bunch of alumni come back, parents, and they'll just hang out like right above the opposing goalie and just throw chirps, try and get in there. Oh, here's a good class 23 story. It was our senior night and we played Delaware. We had just gone to Delaware senior night and we beat them in their barn. And then they came and beat us in our barn. So we split that weekend, but it was my last face-off in class of 23. And we had just scored and I think we made it like 4-5-2 or something like that. You know, there was 4 seconds left on the clock and I knew, you know we weren't coming back from this, but whoever, I don't know who I lined up against, but I was like, he was like, there's 4 seconds left. We're not doing anything, right? And I was like, buddy, this is my last draw ever in this building. Let me win this one. And he goes, oh, I got you, bro. And I just snap it back. And then the buzzer sounds. And I was like, you know, I'll take that. I'll take the last face off of my career in class of 23 as a W. Yeah, man, nothing like playing in that arena.
I got to ask, too, you mentioned the crowd that hangs above the net. Who's responsible for the air horn that goes off when you guys score?
Yeah, so that's Mr. Bill. So Jimmy Bell, yeah, number 22 on our team. His dad always comes with a huge air horn. He comes to everything. Like he is always there. He actually came in on our senior night and did our starting lineup. The boys love him. He always gets us fired up. And so huge shout out to Mr. Bell. He's always bringing the boys mandarin oranges and bananas during the intermission. So always keeps the guys fueled up. But he's such a team guy. It's unreal. We love having him around. Yeah, he always brings the energy. And he's always yelling at the ref. Like he is the first one to like scream at the refs. It's hilarious. It's so funny.
That's awesome. And maybe he wasn't doing the goal horn the first time we went to you guys, but then the most recent time we went, it was like you could hear like the goal horn being played over the loudspeakers, but like he was like beating the goal horn guy to it behind the net.
It's like a drill that like he like rigged to an air horn that you just press the button and it like I don't even know, like he has his own setup. It's awesome.
You've played in a lot of good barns though in the AHA over your time. Like what is one of your favorites to play at? Like what's one of the best places to play on the road?
Yeah, I mean Oswego, I just played in for the first time. That was such a cool rink to be in. I know their D3 program is unreal. That was like one of the coolest barns to be in. Obviously the Bird playing Ohio, you know, they're a really, really good team and they always pack it every night. We played them on their senior night this past year. It's so loud. It is like I got a penalty and like surrounding the penalty box, just banging on the glass. And I'm just like trying not to react. That's an awesome barn. But I think honestly, one of my like welcome to the ACHA moments was being at the Sky Rink in NYU, coming out to Empire State of Mind and like looking out and seeing like the skyline. I got chills my freshman year when I came out to that song. I was like, wow, like this is it, man. Like this is it. NYU is always fun. And then like I said, Navy is always a really cool barn to be in. You know, their fans are so passionate. Those guys are scary dudes. They're defending our country. Like, you know, they're going to give you a tough battle. So
yeah, we always love the dog on Chelsea Piers and the Sky Rink because it is just like you could do a whole podcast on what goes on at that rink. But you come out of that locker room and you go up the ramp, you hear the intro to Empire State of Mind, NYU comes running down the stairs from their locker room. That is pretty cool, especially when they do have the windows open and you can look out onto the water.
We always warm up on the pier.
They got that park there too.
Yeah, so we go outside. And this past year when we played NYU, I don't know like what it was, like all those like protests, there was like fireworks going off. It really got me in the feels. Like I was like ready. It got me going. Even just coming into the city, I remember listening to Shaw's interview with you guys, and you know, coming into a city like New York and you just see the skyline and you're like all the huge buildings. Like yeah, Philly's really cool, but New York is like such a different
different beast of a city. It's so huge. Even like just walking around the city, like we got there early this past year. So we got to walk around the city a little bit, like go grab some coffee before game time. I could never myself go live in New York. I respect to those NYU guys. Like Philly's a beast in and of itself. New York's crazy, man.
Both times I went to NYU, we stayed in Jersey and we just like commuted over from the hotel. So we didn't really get to explore the city, but I made it my mission senior year. I was like, when we go to these places, like how often in my life am I going to be in Pittsburgh again? So like if we can go out in Pittsburgh, like let's explore. And so when we played you guys, it was the morning of, we were staying, it's like the town is like known as maybe like one of the worst areas to live in. It's like right in Jersey on the border of Philly.
Camden?
Yeah, we stayed in Camden. We stayed in a Holiday Inn right on the interstate. So like me and a couple of the boys, we just Ubered to downtown Philly and like walked around like the Liberty Bell, like gave ourselves a self-guided tour, because it was like, you know, like how it's pretty crazy that like we're just playing college hockey and you do get to play in a lot of these like cities. It's cool that hockey takes you those places. I got to ask, I was going to say, like, what do the boys think of going to Syracuse? Because you guys have made the trip up a couple times and it sounds like maybe there was a breaking point for you the last time you went there.
Yeah, man. I like, we were all joking after we won, when we beat URI and won the chip, like Syracuse was the only team we didn't beat. And we were like, no, they're going to come down from the rafters and they're like the final boss that like, they're going to say, no, you can't have the trophy until you beat Syracuse. Yeah. Playing in that rink is super cool too. I mean, we always thought it was weird how you guys have those like lockers. How does that work? Do you have to like bring your gear into the room? That kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. So new this year, my senior class is like part of the group who started the fundraising campaign for it, but they used to like not even have stalls in the room. Yeah, you like kept your stuff. The freshmen and sophomores who didn't want to keep their stuff in their dorm would keep it in a locker at the rink. So there's nothing more demoralizing than like losing to a team and they're like loading the bus and you're just like putting your like elbow pads into the locker. So now they have like a full-on room. And I don't know like what the rules are for like who keeps their stuff in the room. It's the visitor's locker room for the NCAA team. Our women's team is NCAA. So like if Mercyhurst is coming into town for the weekend, like we got to get our stuff out of there. So I did want to ask you, maybe now that you're done with Drexel hockey, maybe you can answer this question for me. But do you remember when you guys didn't come to Syracuse?
No. When was this?
It was the year after COVID. You guys forfeited two games because you got in trouble with the school.
Oh, yeah, dude. Oh, my God. All right. Yeah, I can tell you the story. Every year we do like team bonding stuff. We got together and we do a team scavenger hunt. I won't, you know, say any names. There's a huge list of stuff that you have to bring back to the hockey house. Flowers from, you know, this garden, or like, I don't even know, ketchup packets from our Chick-fil-A or something like that. One of the guys thought it would be funny to take a sorority's chair. Like they have these like big lawn chairs that they like paint and they all sign or whatever. So one of our guys took a sorority chair, brought it back to the house, and we were like, dude, what? Like, why do you it was a huge chair too. Like, it wasn't small and it didn't fold up. Like, he had to like hike it over his shoulder and like carry it back. Kind of absurd, but they put it back, whatever. I think like the sorority girls kind of got wind of it, and there was like, you know, DMs back and forth with a couple of the guys that I wasn't originally involved with. And I was like, hey, I don't know what's going on. Like, I think everything was returned, blah, blah, blah. But I was in class one night, a night or two later, I answered the phone. It was like the Drexel, like head of police. And he was like, hey, is this Pat McGinley? Like, I'm hearing there's some stuff going on with your team. I was like, dude, I don't know what's going on. Like, I will take care of it. I immediately called my coach and I was like, hey, like, we have an issue. Like, the sorority girls like did not like that. Like, we returned everything, but like, they were not cool with that. Definitely got our wrist slapped a little bit. We're really lucky that like nothing worse happened. They made us forfeit against you guys. Like, I didn't even realize it was against you guys. That's crazy.
It was actually our parents' weekend.
No way, dude.
Again, it was like first year of the season. Like, no one's played for a year. Like, you don't really know what to expect. Like, I remember like we played Stony Brook and all of a sudden, like, I'm going out into the ice and like Brendan Pepe is still there. And I'm like, dude, like, shouldn't you have graduated? Like, the night before, I'm like trying to look at their roster to see who they have. And I look at their roster, I'm like, oh no, like, we might be in, like, we have a lot of young rookies, like, we might be in for one. And so they like beat the wheels off of us two nights in a row. But like, we played them close in the first two periods and then they got away in the third. So like, I don't know who you guys had played the weekend before, but we like thought we were gonna have a really close game with you guys. And then it was just kind of like it just felt like not like a slap in the face, but it was like we had such a bad year. And then it said we had six wins, but like two of those wins were forfeits because you guys didn't come and play us.
Yeah, dude. So, oh my God.
we had a practice that like all the parents came and watched. Cause I mean, I don't think my parents didn't come, but like a lot of like the freshman parents came with, it was like, oh, like we'll come for parents weekend. We'll see them play. Like we didn't even have a game. So I wanted to get your side of the story.
Yeah, dude, that was a crazy time, man. We've definitely had a couple of close calls and run-ins. Our group of guys is just unreal. Like a lot of guys from like in and around the Philly area. And like, we just love it. They just love getting into trouble. It's so much, it makes it so much fun. Yeah, it's stressful because I got to keep these guys in line half the time. But it's like, we have like the greatest group of guys. It is awesome.
One guy I wanted to make sure we gave a shout out. Again, you just play against the same guys for 4 years. Like you learn the names and faces, but like Nick Urbani, like give us an Herb story.
Dude, Herbs, oh my God, there's too many with this guy. He's like, the story I want to tell, I just definitely cannot tell. Let me think of one that like I can tell.
I remember he got kicked out of a game at Syracuse and like he didn't even do anything bad. And I remember he was like freaking out.
You asked us to come on the pod. Literally, he was getting kicked out. I vividly remember you were like, yo, that guy's a beauty. You two should come on the pod sometime. And I was like, let's go. Like 100%. No, Herbs is like one of the best hockey players I've played with. Like he's such a talented guy, such a good dude, such a good leader. We were both freshmen. We came in together. He won rookie of the year that year. He's just the man. Like he's such a good D-man, just a good guy. He's always there for the boys. He came out to the championship when we played URI. His brother as well, Mike, is on the team now, also D-man. Yeah, their family is just the best. Like surrounding yourself with like I said, talking about such a special group. We have like the group of alumni we have always come into our games. Like it's a really, really special group for sure.
Now walk us through like what you're going to school for, because I feel like that's part of your Drexel hockey story.
Definitely. Yeah. I came into Drexel as a film major. Yeah, it's like definitely different. Like I feel like a lot, Drexel's an engineering school. There's a lot of like business finance guys. When I came in, I always wanted to kind of do film, like commercial specifically, documentary type stuff. My career aspirations, what I'm trying to chase right now. Yeah, like when I came in, our head coach Kyle Zoldy, like he knew I was like a video film guy, and he like always wanted to do a recruiting video or like a hype video for the team. It's crazy because it took me till my final year of grad school to actually get that video out, which we finished this past year. Yeah, I went to film school. Film school was cool. It was definitely weird. Like film school is like a different education. It's like, you know, art is like super subjective or whatever. There was like, you know, your lighting classes, camera classes, editing, sound classes, all that stuff. No, I definitely learned a lot. And the people I met though, I think was kind of what I got most out of that program. Really cool opportunities from my co-op, which Drexel does like the co-op system, which is like a 6-month internship that's kind of built into your education. So you're not taking classes, you're doing an internship. I kind of like went and got my own co-op. That was right after COVID, my junior year. I didn't go through the school system for co-op, which they kind of like match you up with opportunities. I hit this guy up who I had like watched on YouTube for a while. He was from the Philly area and he has like, I think it's like 400,000 some subscribers on YouTube. And I just always watched his like content. And I was like, hey man, if you ever need anything, like let me know. And he got back to me with an email like 3 minutes later. I was like, yo, I'm shooting a music video. Like, can you come help me out? And from then on, he has become like my mentor for like career stuff. Danny Gewirtz, I have to shout him out. He's the man. He's taken me to like the craziest place. Like I'm going to Kenya. I'm missing the last week of school to go to Kenya with him to shoot a documentary. We're shooting like this short doc about this track and field team from Kenya. So we leave on the 11th. Yeah, I've been to like Vancouver to shoot an Ironman documentary about this guy who's trying to become the youngest man to run an Ironman or compete in Ironman on every continent. So definitely had some crazy experiences from that Drexel film program that all stemmed from that. Now I'm in grad school. When I graduated undergrad, COVID happened and like I was doing film school online, which like didn't work. So I didn't really feel ready to like, I didn't know what I was going to do. And I kind of always had this idea to start my own production company and kind of go like an entrepreneurial route. When I was told about the MBA program at Drexel, it was an accelerated program, a year to a year and a half. And it kind of just like felt like the right fit. And then of course I could still play hockey. So it was like kind of a win-win and it just sort of made sense for me. I guess transitioning to the grad program, doing more business stuff. It's weird going from very subjective grading to like you're making art to like now you're taking finance classes, marketing, operations, supply chain management classes, and meeting people in that space too was really cool because as like a film guy, you know, a lot of the people I'm in classes with are much older than me coming back for their master's. And they're like, yo, you do like film? Like, that's crazy. So Drexel has been like such a cool experience as far as my education goes. Obviously the hockey was unreal, but the education too, like opened so many doors for me. Yeah, man, it's been awesome.
One of those doors I'm assuming is you guys being in the ESPN NHL playoffs intro video. Like, where in your connections did that land?
Yeah, so when I started kind of like my co-op with Danny, it was weird. Like, it wasn't like a 9-to-5 job. Like, it was whenever we had shoots, we would go out and, you know, do shoots and whatnot. But there was a project that he wasn't really involved in, but he knew I was a hockey guy. And he was like, hey man, like, there's this shoot coming to Philly and it's for the ESPN Stanley Cup. And it was when, I believe it was when Tampa and the Avs played. It's like legit. He was like, it's for the ESPN. They went to Minnesota to shoot War Road. They shot like a bunch of like older guys, like men's league dudes. And they wanted like a group of like city college kids. He was like, you could definitely help out. I'm sure like you would be an asset. And I started as like a PA, a production assistant, which is like the bottom of the totem pole. I was kind of just there to like get waters for people and just like, you know, do the grunt work, whatever. The producer who Danny connected me with, he was like, oh, you play hockey? And I was like, yeah, a little bit. And I ended up like helping them find the rink. I ended up helping them with all my connections in the hockey world. Like, I was quickly like bumped up to like sort of producer level, which was really cool. And then they were like, yeah, we need guys to be in this. I was like, don't worry, I got guys to be in this. So like half my team, like, we suited up. There was like 2 days, I believe. The shoot itself was 3 days total, but we had two of the days guys come out. One was in Iceline in Westchester. We had our coach come out too, and like we did like drills and stuff, and they just wanted like guys whizzing by, like guys sniping top shelf, like all these, like, they were like, can your guys do that? I was like, yeah, I think we should be fine. Like we had an open hockey, and they were like, we want to make sure your guys can like actually skate. And it was funny because, you know, the producers didn't know anything about hockey. They're like through and through filmmakers, so they had never been around hockey. So they came out to Penn. We did like an open hockey, and they're like, we just want to make sure your guys can actually skate. And then they saw us like ripping around, and they were like, oh yeah, this will work. This is going to be awesome. That was like the coolest experience. And then the coolest story from that whole thing was, they had a whole script for a commercial spot. It was like this hype video to intro the Stanley Cup final. Like, it was playing on the Jumbotron in the arena before the players came out. And they had this whole script. It was unreal, like voiceover with this guy reading about doing your job and you know, being a part of a team, whatever. But there was a scene that we were filming. It was in the locker room. The director was like, yo, can you get the guys like pumped up and like kind of like say a little something? And then Dragons always do jersey time before we go out on the ice. So we were like, oh, let's do jersey time. So we all put our jerseys on at the same time. Somebody says a little something before to get everybody pumped up. I was like, let's do jersey time. And I started, and I don't even remember what I said, but like, I kind of like started doing like a little like captain speech before going out for a game. And then the director was like, whoa, stop. We need to get like a sound guy in here. Can we like record you saying this? And I was like, oh yeah, sure. I did like my speech again. And like, I kind of was like pumping the guys up. And then I did like, whose time? And then everybody was like, our time. It was like a weird kind of like a football thing, but like the director loved it. He was like, we need you to do that again. So we did a million takes, and like we had everybody like huddle in, and I was just in the middle, like screaming at the top of my lungs. And then the next day he was like, I look back at like the audio and like the video we have of you, and he was like, I'm completely changing the script. Like, your voice is going to be the voice of the playoffs. Like we're changing the script, and you are going to be like driving this thing. And I was like, okay, like, holy shit. Like, it was insane. Like, and that experience like really like made me like want to do film, like really just dive in. It was like the coolest thing ever. So it was cool to have the boys in it too. Like, when you can get all your buddies to like be in a commercial. Like, I had guys like from high school text me and be like, yo, I literally just saw you on TV. Like, I saw the Drexel guys on TV. Like, what is this? So it was awesome, man.
I guess that kind of preps them for your next project. And now I'm like laughing because you did such a good job at it as a grad student. Like, I can't even imagine what it would have looked like if you had made a Drexel recruitment video as a freshman. How much coaching went into that? Like, hey, I need you to run around Philly, or hey guys, we need to do this shot. Because that's probably a little different, because like, those are your teammates that you're kind of bossing around now on set to get the shot that you're looking for.
Yeah, no, 100%. It was funny because like, I feel like it had to have been weird for them, because I kind of like, I normally keep like my work and my like hockey's like my release. Like, I keep those kind of things separate a lot of the times. On those those shoot days, when we shot the Drexel video, we had like 3 shoot days, and like I kind of just like went like director mode. And I think a lot of the guys like hadn't ever seen me like that before, kind of like in my like flow state almost, like working. And that was like really, really cool to like share that with them. A lot of prep went into that whole shoot. Like I planned out like every shot almost. I have to shout out Liam, Karsten, Colin, 3 of the guys that like aren't hockey guys, but they helped me make this happen, are my producer, cinematographer, and my lighting guy, Karsten, who's also an amazing cinematographer. Having those 3 guys handle the logistics of like making this thing look as good as it possibly can be. And then, you know, me kind of just like trying to bring those 2 worlds together. It was awesome, dude. I'm so proud of that project, and I'm so happy that it turned out the way it did. We actually did like an Indiegogo, like again, going back to Penn, like it's not our rink, so we couldn't get ice for free. Like we had to rent that ice, and like a lot of the gear we had to rent, like the camera equipment. So I was trying to get our caster, our president, to give, I was like, I need $3,000, bro. Give me $3,000. I need to make this video. And he was like, dude, $3,000? He was like, I could do this with my iPhone, bro. Like I was like, oh no, you don't understand, dude. Like I need, and so I did an Indiegogo, and I had so much support from parents, family, friends, other players. It was awesome. And we raised the money, we made it happen. And yeah, it was pretty cool result. I'm super proud of the video, and hopefully it leads to some good recruiting for the team. That was obviously the goal with this whole thing, was to, you know, have a cool recruiting tool for the team. Obviously something I'll have in my portfolio and in my resume for a while.
And I mentioned like the difference it makes in you being a grad student versus if you had done this earlier in your time. There's no smoke and mirrors. Like you captured what it is like to be a hockey player at Drexel. Like how much of that went into it? Like it's not like you went and found like 2,000 people to fill the arena and make it look like that's what it looks like on every night. Like you captured what it feels like to be a Drexel hockey player.
We took a lot of inspiration, I should say, from that Stanley Cup thing that I worked on. And, you know, I reached out to the director and the producers of that and showed them, and they loved it. We wanted to make like club hockey look as cool as possible. That was like the goal. And like, you know, we say it all the time, club hockey is college hockey. And like, we wanted to make it feel like Drexel hockey is as high of caliber hockey as anything. I reached out to the school to try and get some help with gear from the school, and I was like, this is also going to be for the school itself, and like this is going to look like it's an NHL level production. Like we want this to feel as big and as professional as possible. And that was the whole thing behind it, was capturing that. Like the rink isn't always going to be at full capacity, but like the environment you play in is still like second to none. Like it's electric when you're in class of 23. Like we said, it's such a loud barn. Like I said, the weekend we played Navy, my cinematographer Liam came out, and he was like, yeah, like, let me just like film the game. And it was the Cold Steel Classic. We had a ton of people there, and it was such an awesome turnout. It couldn't have gone any better. I'm actually going to re-edit. I'm going to do like a 30-second just for Instagram. And I'm going to put like the us winning the ESCHL, where, you know, the Delaware announcer is like calling the game, and kind of put that as the end shot. So I'm pumped for that. But that project was so much fun. A lot of blood, sweat, and tears went into that. I was like a full, I don't even know how long. I want to say it took like 4 months, like all in all, to like completely do that whole thing.
My Drexel hockey insider David Wagstaff was in my ear letting me know when you guys were almost done with production on that. So I know part of it was also the jersey reveal too. Like you helped do that, and those were kind of tied together.
Yeah, the jersey reveal, when we kind of like pitched the fundraiser idea where we needed $3,000 to do this, we wanted to come out with a jersey reveal because we hadn't posted about our jerseys yet. And we were like, hey, if we're gonna film like a documentary or like a recruiting video, like we might as well like get some sweet shots of the jerseys. We did like a 10 to 15 second like little teaser for the jersey reveal, and that got people really hyped up for the actual documentary. Yeah, just trying to finish up school, but once I'm done with school, I'm gonna drop that like 30 second kind of hype video. You know, obviously they'll have content for like the next few years of like clips of guys, obviously the all night stuff we had in the locker room. We like decked out our locker room with these crazy lights. Yeah, it was sick, man.
Well, I mentioned too, kept in touch with David because he sends, you know, photos of you guys for the spotlight and all that stuff. And he asked me before the season started, he was like, hey, like, we're still trying to figure out who our graphic designer is. Like, would you want to like make the Drexel hockey schedule? And I was like, that might be a little weird, but like, I don't care. And now, I mean, record setting season, you guys win the ESCHL title. So I hope I have a job again next year and can help the boys out.
100%, man. Like it was funny. Wags is the man. Our social media this year was all kind of all over the place. Don't get me wrong, our managers are second to none. They don't get enough credit. They do such an amazing job. But we kind of had some like shuffling around of like roles and stuff. You did the the schedule, which looks unreal. My mom printed it out and it's on her calendar. So it's like in our house.
That's like better than anyone sharing another story.
Right. Yeah. We had like game day posts and we had some like reshuffling around of roles. And I actually had to jump in there a couple of times. I was like, Wags, like we need like good graphics here. Like what's the deal? I was like, let me give it a shot. And I made a couple and I was like, he's like, you could have a future in this. Like graphic design is fun, man. Like obviously I'm like a visual, like artsy kind of guy, but like, yeah, like that shit's fun doing the graphic design stuff. And you are sick at it, by the way. Like nobody touches you, man.
I appreciate it. Appreciate it. Let's bring it full circle here because I just found out one of your hidden talents. You are one of the oldest guys on the team this year, yet you are still winning rookie talent show.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. So every year, our first road trip, we always do rookie talent show. We like get a conference room. All the coaches come. The rookies gotta try and impress us. And we always vote on who the winner is going to be. Since I came in, I have like these like stupid, weird talent, like pointless talents. I'm really good at like card magic, like sleight of hand. And I can solve a Rubik's Cube in like less than 30 seconds. When I came in as a freshman, everybody was like, whoa, like who is this kid? Like what? I was doing magic for all the guys and like they made me do the tricks over and over and over. And like nobody could figure out how I was doing them. Like my sophomore year, we obviously did it again. And like, I think that year, like the talents just like weren't that good. I was like, yo, let me step in. Like, let me do a little magic show. And did a little magic for the boys. It kind of just stuck. Like every year, it's like, can you beat Patty in the magic show? So I still did. I'm a fifth year grad student and I still did a little magic show for all the guys. It's so much fun. It's kind of a great way to kick off like our first road trip every year.
They're going to be like on the road next year in the hotel conference room. And they're going to hear like the glass shattered. Patty's going to walk in with a Rubik's cube.
Yeah, bro. Holy.
All right. Well, is there anything we missed here? I mean, I feel like we either touched on it all or people who have never played in the ESCHL or like they didn't talk anything ACHA. They just inside jokes the whole time.
Okay, so there's a couple stories. The one thing I wanted to touch on, going back to when we were talking about kind of our turning point in the season, like when we kind of started to figure things out, we were obviously losing a lot and break happened. Coming back, we all knew that every game was like a must win. One of the practices I think was like sticks out to me as like a turning point. Was like a Thursday night practice. We were doing power play and it was my first ever time dropping the mitts. I fought one of our defensemen, Sean Carver. We were doing power play and like our power play was horrible. Like our power play beginning half of the year was not good at all. And we just like, couldn't figure it out. He was kind of like, he was on PK and he was giving it to us a little bit. I think we got scored on by our PK in practice. So our coach made us do a suicide. And after that, I was pissed. I kind of just went into the corner and just like blew this kid over. Like I hammered him in the corner and I kind of gave him a little extra on the ground because I was pissed. I apologize, Carver. Yeah, he got back up and he was just kind of jawing with me. And I ended up scoring that rep. He was like 13, like, let's have him go. Like you want to play like that? And then he took his helmet off, dropped the mitts. And I was like, oh, like, what did I just get myself into? I've never fought before. This kid played juniors. Like, I was like, I can't back down now. So I took my helmet off, dropped the mitts. And like, we weren't throwing haymakers at each other. We weren't trying to hurt anybody. But like, that moment really sticks out to me as one that like everybody came up and it was like respect on both sides. After the tilt, it was like, we both hugged and it was like, no hard feelings. But like, let's move past this and like, let's get back on the horse and like figure it out. Practice fight. That was definitely a crazy one for sure.
You're literally the St. Louis Blues.
Yeah. No, that's what we said. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Were guys saying that after the fight? What, or were people saying that now that you guys won?
Now that we won, they said we're the St. Louis Blues. Yeah. That and the miracle, obviously. Like we talked about it before. Yeah. When we had Niagara coming up, we were like, these are the Russians and we are the Americans. And if we win, like, it doesn't matter who's coming after us. Like we are, I think it was Finland who they played in the gold medal game, but like we're winning this after we beat the Russians. It was awesome.
Wow, that's and again, that, like you mentioned, like you're not a fighter, so like
I'm not a fighter. I mean, like this year it's so funny, I only scored one goal this year. I'll put it out there, like I was a roll guy this year. I had a few apples, but you know, when you play with two guys like Nick Kester and Matt Harris, like I have to shout those two guys out. Like absolutely amazing hockey players and amazing dudes. Like they make my job pretty easy. I just try and play defense and make sure we don't get scored on and they just go score goals. This year was all about just keeping the guys together. I think when we stick together as a team, I think that's when we're the most successful. You know, it's easy to like let things fall apart and kind of get on each other's case a lot of the times. I think in the first half that was happening and it was almost like we were beating ourselves half the time. And then, you know, once we figured out that, like, you know, we're we're all brothers in this and we're all trying to, you know, reach toward the same goal. Like, we all figured it out and kind of got on the same page at the right time.
Yeah, well, I can't wait for the championship documentary to come out and watch it.
Yeah, dude. gotta start now, man. It's gonna take a million years, but
that's great. Well, hey, Patty, thanks again for coming on. This is perfect timing. I feel like we had a lot more fun than if we had sat down and done this interview 2 months ago, like we had originally talked about.
100%, dude. Like, I'm so appreciative of everything you and your team do for this hockey community, man. Like, Hockey House is awesome. And like, I hope you guys keep going with it. Don't stop. It's like amazing what you guys do. You guys seriously show out for a lot of club hockey players and You guys are awesome. So thank you, man.
Might have to get a Hockey House Pod Pat McGinley collab going in the future at some point with all these documentaries you're turning out.
Yeah, dude, let me know. I'm always down. Always down.
Thanks again for Patty joining the show. It has been a wild week for the boys at Drexel, and they're probably still celebrating as we speak right now. We have a special guest joining us for our Women's One ACHA preview. Friend of the pod, Margaret Dixon. Margaret, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
We need some help here, and it's not because that we don't know enough about ACHA Women's One. It's because this might be the hardest bracket to understand in all of sports. 10 teams are going to nationals, but 3 of them have byes. Like, walk us through this, because you got to experience it firsthand in Marlboro last year. And now you're a fan of the ACHA for life.
I mean, I already was. I have so many friends playing in the ACHA. I've got friends in 1 and 2. This year, looking at our bracket, it is one that is actually really difficult to understand. Our number 1 and number 2 seeds actually have a bye until day 3. So we have the bottom 8 teams playing, 3 through 10 play on the first day. So we have like a quarterfinals in that. The 4 winning teams from day 1 play on day 2 to decide who's going to play teams 1 and 2. So it's very interesting, very confusing if you're not looking at the actual bracket.
Well, and I think too, I was just watching a TikTok about, it was explaining the West Coast Conference, their men's basketball tournament. Teams 9 and 8 play each other. And then there's like 4 rounds, and then the top 2 seeds get byes to the semifinals. So you're basically rewarding Liberty and Midland for having very good regular seasons.
Yeah, I mean, they had insane regular seasons. Midland being undefeated until the championship of their conference. The number 1 seeds were between Midland and Liberty all year.
Yeah, and you got Adrian at 3, Minot at 4, Maryville 5, McKendree 6. McKendree actually beat Midland in a shootout, but because of the shootout rules in the ACHA, it doesn't go down as a loss. You have University of Michigan, who got off to a hot start, was in the top 5 for a while. Indiana Tech at 8, University of Michigan Dearborn at 9, and then ASU at number 10. This should be an exciting one. I feel like the story of the last couple of years has been like, hey, Liberty won it last year, and then we come on here and we pick a new team to win it, and it's still Liberty every year. I mean, Margaret, you had a front row seat for those games. Like, last year, they're tied with Miami late. They end up winning that game, and then they're losing by 3 goals to Adrian. They come all the way back in that game, and then it just felt like a given that they were going to beat Minot State in that close one.
One of my my highlights of last year was watching the Liberty goal in overtime. I remember it just felt like the world, like, it just went silent for a second, and then everything erupted. It was an incredible sight to see. I was front row for every single game. One of the biggest stories this year coming out of Women's One is University of Michigan Dearborn. They weren't at Nationals last year. And for them to be 9th, they also have 2 of the top point leaders in Women's One coming out of this. They have number 1 and number 3. And that was not a thing last year. They were not up there.
It's going to be interesting too. And maybe we won't see it that often because it's at Centene. There's not as many strangers walking through the halls, but I think it would be funny. Like, people in Marlboro would be walking by and see 2 Michigan teams and like not even know how to process that. Like, you know, these 2 teams look exactly like when they're on the ice. You got Michigan Ann Arbor and Michigan Dearborn. So it'll be exciting, but it shows you like the parity in Women's One. The fact that 9 of these 10 teams were at Nationals last year. Is there any other team that you have your eye on that maybe is not the Liberty or the Midland that everybody else is looking at?
Adrian was not supposed to win their conference. They were not supposed to get that auto bid to Nationals. If you look at that, I don't remember what their ranking was coming out of that. They were the underdogs, I think, in both their semifinals and their finals. For them, they're on a little bit of a heater right now. Maryville, they have home advantage on this one. We're going to St. Louis. That's going to be a really interesting sight. They're going to have, it's going to remind me of UMass Amherst men's two last year. If they can get like, you know, the support, if they have the support coming, it's like a big reminder, I guess, of men's two. All of these games are going to be close ones. I don't expect anything. I think goaltending is actually going to be one of the biggest keys in this.
It always is this time of year, and we should be in for a treat. The Liberty women are on such a tear. Like, it's one of those things where it's like, we're either going to see history and they win, I believe, their sixth in a row, or there's going to be a new champion, and that'll be just as exciting. So we'll keep an eye on this tournament here. And then, Margaret, you didn't get to catch any of women's two last year, but that tournament was insane. There were upsets all over the place.
Actually, I did get to catch women's two. I was, bououncing back and forth. They were on the rink behind us. I mean, I was singing the national anthem. I was sprinting back and forth between rinks some days singing the national anthem. I did actually get to catch a lot of it. I've got some friends playing over there. But last year, it was an insane, you know, Northeastern was the Cinderella story of last year. Not expecting for them to come out of pool play. Not expecting them to make the run that they did.
Yeah, and we'll get a rematch of those two teams in Pool D. You have Sioux College at one, Northeastern at two, Navy at three, Mercyhurst at four. They won their conference. Go in reverse order here. Pool C is Assiniboine with one, Central Michigan at two, BC at three, and Northern Michigan at four. Pool B has Villanova, Dakota College. They kind of went on a run last year. They were a team to watch out for. Adrian three, Assumption four. And then Pool A has Providence, Rhode Island, Delaware, St. Thomas, and Liberty. So some interesting matchups here in pool play, but I think that was the biggest thing that I remember last year, and it was so tough to follow. And I think that's the beauty of nationals, especially for women's too, is you get these teams that have not played each other. So many teams that haven't played each other before, and now that all of a sudden they're in pools. So the rankings kind of get thrown out the window because, you know, a lot of these teams, because it is women's two, maybe they're not spending as much money on travel. They're staying very regional. They're playing the teams that are close to them a lot more often than they're traveling. And so we get some exciting matchups. And last year, there was a handful of upsets as well. Collins, what's the inside scoop on the Nova girls here? Do they have what it takes to break through Pool B?
I have no clue, man. This is a really, really tough pool, I think. And I pray that they're going to come out on top. But when you have the likes of Adrian, you know, Dakota College, it's not going to be easy.
Collins is going to have to contend with the Weiss girls on campus now after this. This is a dangerous game he's playing.
I'm like at the point now where I think I got spoiled by Villanova basketball my first 2 years, getting to see an Elite Eight and a Final Four, where my hopes and dreams have been crushed, and now I need to keep my expectations in check. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be a walk in the park like they've had all season in the DVCHC. So we'll see. I mean, they're coming off their first DVCHC championship. Hopefully they can keep the momentum going.
And they have a legit goalie this time around, right? Margaret, are you expecting to sing the Canadian anthem in the semifinals again this year?
It's going to be up to Molly, Commissioner of Women's One. But I do have a little fun fact that I will be at Women's Two Championship PAing that. Well, definitely, I think finals definitely getting the Canadian national anthem out. No, I got to break it out this year for Mass Maritime, which was awesome. Mass Maritime versus Bishops. I'm looking forward to bringing it back.
Yeah, tough to pick against the Sioux, and Assiniboine got upset last year against Northeastern, so I'm sure they're ready to go for this one, to go back to St. Louis, where they won their last national championship as well. The only division we haven't gotten to is AAU Division III. They will also be doing their national tournament in Westchester. Eight teams will vie for this national title that went to St. John Fisher last year, and they are not going back to nationals. They were in AAU D2 this year, not making the cut for nationals, so there will be a new champion in AAU D3. Pool A, we start with the number one team in the country, the Miami Hurricanes, followed by Stony Brook, Rochester, and William and Mary. William and Mary coming off their ACC title this weekend. And then in Pool B, you have Florida Southern, Kennesaw State, Quincy, and Alvernia. Those eight teams will get narrowed down to two each from each pool for the semifinals, and then their finals for the national championship. Like we mentioned, a new winner. A couple familiar faces here. Miami. I mean, a lot of these teams are going to nationals for the first time, though. There's familiar faces, as in they've been at the top of AAU D3 for most of the season. But of the eight teams in the field, I believe only Florida Southern, the only team that was at Nationals last year. Stony Brook had a great turnaround year. William Mary, a championship run. Kennesaw State had a great run. They are going to Nationals. Quincy has been working very hard since the pandemic to get their team up and going, and now they get to go to Nationals. So a couple teams without Nationals experience should make for a very, very interesting tournament here. Collins, we've talked about AAU D3 a couple times in the last couple weeks. Anything that stands out to you as we get ready for the tourney?
Keep a sneaky eye on Alvernia. They haven't had the best fortune the past 2 years at Iceline, but maybe this is the year they make it out. But yeah, I think all eyes are on Miami. I think who doesn't want to see the Hurricanes win? And we got to get a game between them and Notre Dame. Classic football rivalry.
I believe we're going to see Miami unveil new jerseys at this one. They did win the Verbero Design Your Own Jersey contest. And so I believe the plan is that they will wear those at Nationals. So teams busting out new jerseys at Nationals. I don't know if that's ever been done before, but with Verbero pumping out jerseys left and right, no surprise here. So we'll keep an eye on the Hurricanes.
That's a bold play to wear new jerseys in Nationals. Tim always says, he's like, you don't wear your alternates versus your rival. So it's definitely something interesting to keep an eye on. But Mass Maritime did debut new jerseys at Nationals last year. So
I kind of love Stony Brook as a redemption arc for the school, especially with the struggles that they've had at the ACHA M1 level this year. And the fact that for the past couple of years, the AAU team has taken their fair share of poundings. To see them go the distance this year would be such a stark turnaround, a real feel-good story for the school.
That would be, yeah. That would be great. I'm like thinking in my head, I'm like, you think like the rec services office is like, oh yeah, the hockey team's going to Nationals again. They foot the bill again for a Stony Brook team going to Nationals without even realizing that, you know, there's a new kid in town. And I love their jerseys as well. So I'm excited to see that Stony Brook team play. Some schools that we don't really talk about too much, like Rochester in the mix there, a team from the Northeast, Quincy as well. So really looking forward to this AAU D3 one. And I think there's a little more wiggle room in this one with 8 teams going and 4 moving on. You can have that hiccup and you can correct yourself and still have a chance at the national title. So we'll wrap up the show here, but wanted to just quickly go around the horn. We did it at the end of last episode, but maybe something again you're thinking about for Nationals. Collins, we're going to Philly first to start things off. It's a place that this will be your 3rd year in a row going to Iceline. Is there anything on the menu that you haven't tried yet at the Goal Line Pub?
I might cry when I walk into that building after ending my hockey career like that. So I didn't get the chance to go into the Goal Line Pub 2 weeks ago and look at their new menu and their offerings. I'm just looking forward to grabbing a beer and having some food after the games are done, and or maybe towards the later stages of the last games, and just, you know, watch. But I think the one thing I'm most excited about, though, is like, I mean, if I'm being honest, aside from Nova WD2, I don't have a horse in any of these races. I am just looking forward to the narratives that will unfold throughout the entire tournament, and just these great storylines like we got last year.
Love it. Yeah. And Herm, we're going back to St. Louis. The first Hockey House Pod trip ever was down to St. Louis, and now we're going back there. We know what to expect. What are your thoughts going into it? Something you're looking forward to?
I'm excited to triple my steps on a daily basis, walking back and forth from the rink to the casino hotel. I am not excited to experience the cigarette smell on the casino floor again, and hopefully we do a better job with food. That was a nightmare last time. We will plan better. Hopefully there is a St. Louis local or someone with a car that can maybe provide some food. That'd be ideal.
Yeah, maybe a grocery store run at the beginning of the week could be a necessity.
Whatever grocery store is local to St. Louis, we will just put a little patch on the front of our jerseys if you guys want to feed us for the week. Like, please.
This is the first time I'm finding out that our hotel is in a casino. Boys, you might need to, you know, handcuff me once we get towards the craps tables here.
Again, maybe we were keeping it from you for a reason, but it'll be exciting for you to get down to St. Louis as well. And Margaret, of course, you've experienced Nationals and now you're getting down to St. Louis. I think it's the home of the ACHA. It should be like college baseball has Omaha. ACHA should take ownership of St. Louis. It's a great place to do it. What are you looking forward to the most?
Well, I'm looking forward to getting back together with everyone. You know, it's been hard kind of being up here in New England. I mean, Murph, we should connect more than we do. considering that we're not that far away from each other. I haven't seen Collins, I haven't seen Herm since Nationals last year. Probably gonna have to stick with Herm when it comes to the food. He already has scouted everything out, being celiac and everything, we kind of have to scout out our food places ahead of time. Collins, I don't know how you didn't know that we're staying in a casino. Yeah, I mean, it's going to be nice. I'm finally 21, so maybe I'll stick with Collins. I'll have a gluten-free beer or something. No, other than that, I'm just excited to kind of go back and watch hockey. It's been a lot of my coaching little kids, and don't get me wrong, I love my kids. I cannot wait to go back and watch college hockey.
To my defense, Murph has kind of been like my trip planner over here. I don't have to do anything. I just give him the reins and he just tells me where to go.
Okay, so if your friend drops off a bridge, you're going to follow him too?
If that friend tells him to pick him up at the Philly airport at 9:45, he'll be there.
I told Collins, I said, I'll see you tonight at 8:45. And he said, wait, you're coming too? This kid will jump. It's not, can you jump? It's where am I jumping? Sure, I'm down.
Hey, when my leader says, I want you to jump, I don't ask why, I ask how high.
Well, we will be jumping into all the action this week, whether it's at Westchester, at the Ice Line, the Refrigerator, Rink 4, or if we're at the Barn, the outdoor rink in Centene. We're going to have all the coverage for you. As always, tune in at Hockey House Pod across all social media platforms. Looking forward to it. It is the most exciting time of the year. We will be back. We will be in Philly and St. Louis, but we will be back over the airwaves on March 18th. We're going to take a week off for Nationals so we can cover all that stuff. And then we will record an episode that week that we get back and we can kind of debrief everything for you then. So thank you so much for tuning in. As always, we will see you in a couple weeks, start of the off season.
See you, boys.